Well, you can say hi if you want to.
Hi, this is
Howdy.
Hi. Hello.
Hi.
Hi, this is Greg LeMond. Welcome to the VeloCast.
That's nice, really nice, yeah.
A happy new year to you all, and welcome to another edition of the VeloCast. Trusting that the traditional combination of festive gluttony and indolence have led you to be a few kilos heavier than we last spoke, it's time we shake you from your torpor and get down to the serious business of talking about cycling. So, coming up on this week's show, Aru's jersey jumps the national shark, and shock horror, it's hot in Australia in the summer. But first, surprising absolutely no one is the news that in a population of only 84,000, Mark Cavendish has been picked to represent the Isle of Man at the 2018 Commonwealth Games. However, what does appear to be more of a thing which will make you go, is the non-inclusion of silver medalist from the previous games, Pete Kenyuch.
Actually, when you think about it, and, you know, Happy New Year, folks. Let's get that one out of the way. As Scotsmen, we have to make a big thing about welcoming 2018 or 2018, if you prefer.
Here's your piece of shortbread and coal.
Yeah, a lump of coal. We used to do that, actually. Open the front door, open the back door. Somebody came with shortbread, coal and whiskey. It was a very fine day, or a very fine evening. I remember being very, very young and being fed sips of alcohol in a truly Scottish way. But anyway, moving swiftly along.
Get that down, you son. Go on.
If you look at that, if you look at our population of the Isle of Man, isn't it amazing what they've managed to produce? And I think it's indicative of what you can do with a really good local organisation with some really motivated grassroots folk. I mean, to turn up in an island of that size, Pete Kenyuch and Mark Cavendish and umpteen other talents, well done, Isle of Man, says I.
Well, that's hardly surprising anybody, really, when you think about it. We have known of Mark Cavendish and Pete Kenyuch for quite some time now, but I think, you know, not to bury the leads, isn't so much that Cav has been selected, as I'm sure he would be the first name down on anybody's team sheet, but the fact that Pete Kenyuch hasn't thus far been selected. And the subtext seems to be that this is more to do with Kenyuch moving from Sky to Bora, and Bora may not being willing, or they certainly don't know yet as to what his race calendar is going to be and whether the Commonwealth Games are doable given the race calendar that's yet to be written.
Yeah, and I think that's perfectly fair. I mean, the Isle of Man DS has said that he's hopeful that Kenyuch will still join them. But Kenyuch, having left Sky, where he said he was just going through the motions, has joined Bora Hansgrohe. Now, we know the depth of talent in that team. We know that they will have a race programme which will feature lots of riders hoping to win, one of whom will be Kenyuch. You know, he's a proper talent. He's not going to go there just to be a domestique and bury himself at the service of others. So they'll have to coordinate all of their race programmes. And the sad truth is that other than for Australia and maybe Great Britain and maybe a couple of other former Commonwealth countries, the Commonwealth Games is really hee-haw in terms of exposure for a professional team. Now, as we've often said, these guys are rolling billboards. So if there's a more important engagement that the team want Kenyuch to be at, the Commie Games are going to have to go wanting. And to be honest, even though we're in the UK, even though we've watched the Commonwealth Games, I mean, I remember watching it when it was at Meadowbank at the Velodrome. You know, and I was kind of barely a blink in my father's eye. And they had the team time trial up and down what now is essentially the gridlocked city bypass at the time. So we're steeped in the Commonwealth Games, but if you're a continental, professional, World Tour level squad, you might have better things to do with your riders. And you can't really blame them, can you?
No, not at all. Just to not to start off the new year correcting you, but just before people with... I'm saving you from the people who've just been given green pens for Christmas and writing.
You did it in the last show of the year as well.
That, of course, there is no such thing as the UK when it comes to the Commonwealth Games. The home nations compete individually.
Oh, aye. That's why the Isle of Man gets to talk. Well, it's a complicated thing. But yes, Scotland has a Commonwealth Games squad, which if we had all of the best Scottish riders, I think we'd probably be the best folk in the world, with the Australians a close second, you know, if you were putting together a historical thing over the last 20 years. But you're quite right. I mean, we kind of perform as constituent nations as opposed to the, you know, the state that is the United Kingdom. But, you know, it'd be nice to see Kenyuch there, because the thought of what Kenyuch and Cavendish could do as a 1-2 squad from a very small, you know, very small island off the coast of England. That's kind of quite exciting when, you know, you think about that as a prospect.
Whilst we here in the Northern Hemisphere look out over monochrome landscapes of skeletal trees being battered by one winter storm after another, those down at the other end of the world have been enjoying summer and with it the onset of the 2018 road season. As ever, the first glimpse of skinny tyres we're afforded comes via the Australian National Championships, where in the women's criterium race, Rebecca Wasiak was the surprise winner.
I'm finding it hard to get excited about these two races, so don't get too expectant of a long show, because they're crits. You know, it's a very, very specialised discipline where you have to be able to lay down a lot of power coming out of a corner. You have to be a superb bike handler. You have to be able to read a sprint. You have to be able to take the risk of that breakaway sticking. So all of the elements of road racing are there. But more often than not, they end up, as you know, the women's and the men's national crits did here, with pretty much a sprint after action that you could talk about, but it would be, you know, they went off the front, then they went off the front, and then they got caught back. But for a track rider, it's a particularly good discipline, you know, because as well as the pursuit, which is what Wasiak was famous for, I mean, she's, I think, twice world pursuit champion, you learn all of those elements of track craft. Was it Jason Kenny or Laura Trott who said when they introduced the Omnium for the Olympics, it's what they used to learn how to ride the track? Mm. You know, so it's not just steady state stuff. You get all of those points races and Madisons where you're stopping, you're accelerating, you're slowing down, you're accelerating. And that stands you in great stead for crit racing. So I was delighted to see, now 33 years old, Rebecca Wasiak take this title, because she's got the skills, but she's been, you know, busy with other commitments in the past. So it's nice for her as she reaches towards the end of her career to take a national title that will mean a lot to her. Good racing.
It was, and, you know, as the Cycling News article on this race says, you know, she was out of the list of favourites and really outnumbered. So you would have expected, you know, the women who came in silver and bronze position, Sarah Roy, Kimberly Wells, to have been up there ahead of Rebecca, but a fantastic result for the, as you say, now 33-year-old.
And a lot of that will have come from her track craft. Make no mistake, if she found herself in the right position on that tight, tight circuit, I mean, the circuit was only 1.1 kilometres long, then she had the skills to be able to pull off the victory, and clearly did. And to be in front of people like, you know, Petta Mullins, Sarah Roy, Kimberly Wells, all of those folk, Lauren Kitchen as well, who are just great, great riders in this kind of event, it's a really, really nice thing. And, you know, as I say, probably what is the twilight of her career? I mean, 33 is not old for a female rider, but these real, real explosive events tend to go to, you know, slightly younger folk.
In the men's criterium, though, it was business as usual, as Caleb Ewan took his third consecutive title in an almost perfect sprint finish that saw off Steele Van Hoff and Brenton Jones. Sorry, just before you go on, isn't it nice to be able to say the name Steele Van Hoff again? Haven't said his name for a few years.
It's still wrong that he's Australian, though. I mean, Steele Van Hoff should be, I mean, that's a proper kind of Belgian name, isn't it?
Well, either that or some kind of Bond villain with a vaguely European but completely indeterminate accent.
I've actually been talking to some of the Rosie chums about this race, and basically they said that Mitchelton Scott bossed the entire day. You know, they just absolutely knew that Caleb Ewan was going to win. They controlled the race beautifully, and they delivered him exactly where he needed to be. And although at some point I've got to say Caleb is going to fall off the front of his bike in one of these sprints, he seems to get lower and lower every year. You know, the Bay Area crits were off this year because they clashed, I think, in dates with these nationals. But to get that first win of the year under his belt just before the Tour Down Under, we've said until we're blue in the face that sprinters run on confidence as much as anything else. Once you've got the form, that last 1% might be just how much you believe in yourself. What you've got here is Caleb Ewan has been shown by his team that they have the utmost faith in him, which is well deserved. He's been delivered where he needs to be, and he's been perfectly capable of finishing it off. It's hardly a surprise. I mean, we know he, you know, we know what a talented sprinter he is, and in a crit, it perfectly made for him. But still, to do that, to actually deliver before, you know, the big first race of the year for these guys, Caleb Ewan will be on cloud nine going into the Tour Down Under.
And it's exactly that. It is the performance not only of Caleb Ewan, but of the newly named Mitchelson Scott coming into the Tour Down Under that this race is so important to them. It's so much better than doing well in your training. You get a win under your belt. It shows the team how they've come together during the winter training, and they now are the team to beat when it comes to those sprints we're expecting and the Tour Down Under.
Do you know, you corrected me earlier on about the Commonwealth Games.
Yeah, I did, yes.
I think you nearly had to correct me for something else there. I was just looking at the results to, you know, look at the names who were close to Caleb. And the thought actually went through my head, wow, the top 10 are all Australian.
What are the chances of that?
I'm really worried about myself. I think it's still the Christmas and Hogmanay hangover.
We really should phone the Guinness Book of Records or something, because, and I probably need to check the nationalities of those who either didn't start or didn't finish, but the top 54, John, they were all Australian as well.
It's amazing, isn't it?
You know, astonishing stuff.
It's a road race of all Australians in Australia. Actually, the other thing that Caleb Ewan will be preparing for, and I don't know if it'll suit him at all, is, you know, we've got the road race championships on Sunday around Mount Buninyong, which is, it's a volcano. It's an extinct volcano. It's a really fascinating thing. It's, you know, what, 700 metres high, and the circuit uses the road going round that. And it's a steep wee bugger of a road. I watched a preview the other day, so I'm not actually that sure if the sprinters will be able to hold on for the finish. I think it might suit the kind of, yeah, the guys more like Simon Gerrans, maybe, the kind of guys who do well in Milan San Remo and that kind of thing. I'm really interested, looking forward to the road on Sunday. But Ewan, if he's in with a shout, you know, if he manages to hang on going over those climbs, because he's a relatively lightweight guy, he'll be on a real high for that as well. It's a good result for Ewan, and it's a really good start for this newly named team. You know, they've lost a lot of those guys who put together the spirit which we saw in Orica Scott, which developed that squad. It feels almost like a new chapter for them, and what a way to start it.
Just before we move on, because we need to talk about the weekend coming up, just mentioning Steele Von Hoff there and his new team, Benelong Swiss Wellness.
That's easy for you to say.
Not really. I love the name Swiss Wellness. If there was anything more Swiss, I can't think of it, but Swiss Wellness.
Yeah, she'd have a cuckoo clock or something, shouldn't it?
You are now officially well. Well done.
Yeah.
Well, looking ahead to the weekend and the Australian National Championship road races, the organisers have decided to shorten the distances race for the under-19s and the under-23s as temperatures are expected to reach over 40 degrees on Sunday. Or, beg your pardon, on Saturday.
I think that's only fair. I mean, it's a sensible choice. We've seen the extreme weather protocols deployed before, mostly for cold conditions. But, you know, you think about this, we are, as we rightly say, part of the reason that we get all this confusing stuff with the Australians doing their nationals is it kind of happens to be summer over there. And it's no fun whatsoever racing in 41 degrees, which is what's expected for Saturday. You look at the course, if you watch the course previews, there's loads of exposed areas where that sun is just going to be beating down upon your head. And you're motivated for your national championship. It'd be all too easy to go really, really deep and do yourself some serious harm. So whilst, you know, you're being deprived of a wee bit of distance as a spectator, for the riders, I think this is exactly the right decision in the first day of the roads.
I have to query the amount that's being shortened, though. The under 19 men's and under 19 women's races are being shortened from 104.4 kilometres to 70 for the under 19 men, but the under 19 women are getting shortened from 69.6 to 58. Now, thinking, it's hardly worth the bother. I mean, if you're going to get heat stroke, it's hardly likely to be in that last 10 kilometres, is it?
Yeah, all they've done is taken a lap off the women's, haven't they? And they've taken, what, four laps off the men's. Having said that, that's the great dilemma. And one of the ridiculous things about these women's races being that much shorter anyway. Mm. You know, if you shortened it 2 laps, bugger me, I could get round it. Never mind these, you know, these racing fit women.
So no offense, I'm knowing 41 degrees, you couldn't.
Oh, I didn't say on a bike.
An air-conditioned vehicle, okay.
I could wear a very large ice vest, it would be fine. It is the problem that if you are going to shorten a women's race that's already, I think our opinions are clear on this, unreasonably short. You know, these women are clearly capable of riding far further than the distances they're allocated. Then it is between the sublime and the ridiculous. You have to shorten it because you've done it with the men's, which is the right thing to do. It's the right thing to shorten the women's. But if they take 2 laps off, suddenly you're barely warmed up before it's time for the finishing sprint.
Exactly. You know, so,
what you need is quality. If you were starting from an equal basis, it would look far less ridiculous. But as I say, I think it's the right thing for them to shorten.
Yeah, and to the elite races that you mentioned when talking about Caleb Ewan before, those come on Sunday and temperatures aren't expected to be anywhere near as severe as they're going to be on the Saturday. So as we report now, the distances for the elite men's and women's races are to remain intact.
And they're going to be fascinating. When I was, you know, preparing the show notes for this, or for my notes, I genuinely thought we should put in a full preview of the men's and women's road races for Sunday, just to try and pad out what is, frankly, a very short show, because not much has happened, strangely enough, over the Christmas and New Year holidays. But I don't want to, because I have no idea what's going to happen. I don't know how that hill's going to break things down. It depends entirely upon the pace that it's raced at, which you won't know until the day. And looking down the quality of riders who are racing, you have a whole raft of motivated people. So I think prognostication would just be, frankly, a complete waste of time. We just have to watch, if we possibly can, and enjoy watching these guys trying to get the champion's jersey, which they will wear with pride throughout the entire season.
Friends, family, teammates and staff paid tribute to Jason Lowndes this morning by completing a memorial lap of the Australian National Road Race course. The cycling world was shocked just before Christmas to learn that the 23-year-old had been killed when he was hit by a car whilst out on a training ride near his home in Victoria.
Yeah, I mean, I thought this was a perfect example of how there's a real sense of community in Australian cycling. You know, that the banter that goes on between them all. And we've seen, you know, the Orocascope backstage passes. We've seen, you know, Carly's stuff on YouTube. And there's an outgoing inclusivity about the Australian scene that I find really, really impressive. And I think this is actually symbolic of that. I mean, Jason Lowndes was the latest in a distressingly long list of really, really high-class riders who've lost their lives in 2017 in incidents with motor vehicles. Absolutely gutting end to the year, but I think it's a really nice memorial for, you know, all of these folk to come together and give other people a chance to show their respects to Jason by riding a lap of the course. So not much more to say about it other than, you know, rest in peace, Jason, and, you know, you clearly meant a lot to these people.
Well, I think not only that, just it wasn't just the Australians who, of course, were shocked. Of course, the fact that Jason was Australian, and indeed the Nationals are on this week, it gives an opportunity for his friends and family and teammates and the Australian cycling community to come together and pay their respects and pay a tribute to him are obvious. But, you know, the news just before Christmas, as I said, I think shocked the entire cycling mm-hmm. world. Yeah. You only have to look at some of the reactions that were coming out via Twitter and other places and social media that, you know, it wasn't just Cycling Australia. There was people like, you know, Dan McClay and Ryan Mullen, BMC and Brian Smith, of course, all kind of coming out and saying how shocked they were at the loss of Jason and expressing their deepest condolences. Again, as you mentioned, John, another incident involving a motor vehicle, this time not in a race, but as we've seen with other riders, just being out in training rides is now increasingly dangerous, and we're seeing more incidents that are involving injury and, in the most tragic circumstances, deaths of young, talented bike riders. And it's an appalling thing to have to talk about.
Yeah, stay safe out there, people. You know, these guys, I mean, what you forget with the hours that they're putting in on the bike, essentially, they're just more at risk than, you know, punters like you or I, Scott, who might go out for, you know, an hour or 2 or 3 hours occasionally. These guys are out on the road day after day, hour after hour. So they are exposed to a higher level of risk than us. But, you know, ultimately, they're just road users who happen to be much quicker. So please, people, take care out there.
Well, if there's one thing that cycling fans love, it's a good old moan about disrespecting some arcane aspect of the sport. And the Cyclogenzia were off to an early start, as the new year was barely a couple of days old when the first teeth of 2018 were gnashed. The first this time being directed at Fabio Aru's Italian national champions jersey under the auspices of new squad UAE. Over now to our indignation correspondent, Mr. John Galloway.
Absolutely astonishing. I mean, I like you, laugh at some of the stuff that we as cycling fans get worked up about. And I pour scorn upon some of the arcane traditions which we demand are observed. But one thing that does really annoy me is a shite national champions jersey. And dear God, this was shite. It was almost impossible to distinguish it from the normal jersey. And they managed to turn it around in a day. The next day there was a picture of Fabio Aru out training in something that I still don't think is a great national champions jersey, but is much, much better than that first attempt where it looked like somebody'd slipped with a couple of magic markers on the bottom of his jersey.
Do you know, I think I can understand why they did it, though. I'm not defending it. I understand why they did it. And if they'd actually stuck to the rationale behind...
Well, you're the designy wanker. Explain it to me.
I think there's a compliment in there somewhere. If you look at the standard issue UAE Team Emirates jersey, it's actually the United Arab Emirates flag, which forms the lower third of the jersey. Mm-hmm. And I think if they had gone with... So their thinking has essentially been, right, we'll replace the UAE flag with the Italian tricolour. And that's how, you know, that's our logic for why we placed the Italian flag where it is. But from a design point of view, what they've done in the original jersey is have this kind of sweep. They've meshed and distorted the UAE flag, so it sweeps down from like under your armpit almost, or from the side of the jersey, from one side of the jersey to the other side at the bottom. Whereas, and it looks quite nice, but what they've done with the tricolour is just plaster it across the front.
Yeah.
So they've utilised the space from one flag and used it for another, thinking that that's the best way to not disrupt the existing jersey too much, but pay tribute to another flag. And of course, they just haven't paid enough tribute as far as not only the Tifosi are concerned, but the wider cycling public and all.
And it's got to be said, commentators as well. You know, you want a big obvious jersey so that you can work out who the hell it is that's in the break. Although, to be fair with Aru, you can tell just by his knees and his elbows.
Well, the fact that, you know, facially he looks like a partially deflated sex doll, but that's another story. I can understand how a lot of people, including Aru, are somewhat defending this and saying, look, there's a lot of considerations that they need to be adhered to and need to be met. We're in a very commercial age where people are pouring a lot of money in to cycling in order that their, now whether it's their country or their product or whatever, have to be promoted. And like you were saying earlier about the Australian National Championships, or indeed Pete Kenyuk and representing the Isle of Man versus his commercial trade team's duties throughout the year. It's the same with the Italian national jersey. It has to kind of take second place to the fact that it's being displayed under the auspices of a commercial team. And much as we would like to have it just as... I mean, Astana, I think, did a brilliant job last year in putting forward the Italian national champions jersey when Aru was wearing it. I can kind of see UAE's point. They want to show a united team. They don't want one guy sticking out promoting Italy and not United Arab Emirates.
They can away and bile their heats.
I'm torn. I'm conflicted. I totally understand why people.
It was a step too far, is what it was.
It does raise the spectre of why do we actually bother having a national champions jersey when it fundamentally goes against the commercial needs of trade teams. They don't want anybody in a jersey that reduces their impact from a commercial point of view, whether you're selling flooring or the idea of a country itself, as distasteful as UAE as a team actually happens to be. But that's another story entirely.
I would just redesign the whole thing just to suit it, because I get your point, but there are some jerseys, a Belgian team having, for example, the Belgian national champion will milk the absolute bejesus out of that for publicity. And I think this is actually, you're right, it is a special circumstance where there was already a flag on that strip, which was their home flag, and it would be difficult to see why they would want to give more prominence to another nation's flag on a strip that featured their own. I think maybe there just needs to be some standardisation. I mean, the thing that got me was, if you look at Christoph in the same picture, where there's the three of them, Dan Martin, Alexander Kristoff and Fabio Aru standing, and he's the European champion, and they mandate what kind of jersey you have to wear. So I think it was made worse by the fact that Alexander Kristoff in that threesome was standing with a proper jersey, which is, thoroughly identifiable to commentators around the world in the most hectic of races. And then beside him's Fabio Aru with effectively the equivalent of, a top tube flag on his bike stuck to the bottom of his jersey. But yeah, I get your design points. I'll take those on board, but I still think they're wrong.
I mean, and I think you've hit upon the solution there, or at least the European Federation may have hit upon the solution. If you look at that picture of Alexander Kristoff with Fabio Aru and Dan Martin, the UAE Team Emirates logo takes almost second place, and if it is a case that the national federations, with the backing of the UCI, say this is, here's the space that's allocated to the flag, the logo and any other design elements must be reduced to the standardized size. That may be the way forward, so that the flag takes center stage and you just have to deal with it, so that it's not left to individual designers at individual teams to come up with a solution that's going to piss off everybody. All the designers need to then say is, right, okay, I've got these rules which I must operate under as mandated by the UCI. Here's the solution, and you know what you're going to get even before you see it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're a design monkey. You know you can work to a brief. But, we've got a lot to be grateful to the team for, because it's given us a good 7 or 8 minutes of talking on something that might have been a 12-minute show.
That's a very good point, well made. So thank you, Team UAE. Now, moving on, and sticking with our mostly Australian theme this week, our best wishes go out to 8-time world BMX champion Caroline Buchanan as she recovers from what sounds like an absolutely horrific car crash.
Yeah, off-road, private land, clearly having fun in an off-road vehicle, a four-wheel drive. Toppled over, she's got some horrible injuries, but thankfully she looks like she's solidly on the road to recovery. These BMX folk are often injured, but she seems to have bounced back from something that's horrible and, with a great sense of humour. There's some fantastic photos of her, one sitting up, but my favourite one is where she's lying down and she's clearly recovering from surgery and is, on her Twitter post is stripped to a way that's not suitable for consumption at work, and she's just put some really funny stickers in, strategic places. So, proper Aussie sense of humour. Please, please, Caroline, recover fast and get back to racing. It's bad enough when people are injured in cycling, but to lose a talent like that from the racing scene for any period of time, because she has the audacity to be out having fun in an off-road vehicle. Get your priorities right, girl.
Just because I haven't seen the pictures that you previously alluded to there, just for clarity, if nothing else, no pun intended, These stickers, these are virtual stickers.
They are virtual stickers of an ambulance in a hospital, yes.
Okay, otherwise I did have this image of Caroline, as you say, being stripped down to a manner which was not appropriate for posting in social media. But first of all, then actually applying actual stickers to certain parts of her anatomy in order to spare her blushes, because that would just be weird.
I tell you, kudos though. I don't know if you remember, a few years ago I had septicemia. Of course you remember, because you came down and visited me and brought the family.
Yes, I was about to say, you may not remember, but yes, I did visit you.
I did a Facebook post, which it pops up every so often, and, you know, happy memories of the last 5 years kind of stuff, of me in a gown on a morphine pump just going, oh, I don't suit these pyjamas, and I posted it to Facebook. I thought that was hard as nails. But Caroline, you know, I don't want to celebrate this whole culture that we have in cycling of being, you know, the ridiculous people who will suffer any injuries. But she deserves proper kudos for, you know, for posting this, because it'll actually give a lot of heart to people who will have been very, very worried about her. You know, that community that we were talking about. Because, you know, the sense of humour's there. She's on the way to recovery. So although it's a poster that celebrates suffering to a certain extent, or a post rather, what it does is it gives heart to the folk who will have been worried about her, to see that, you know, the Caroline Buchanan that they know is still posting from hospital with dodgy stickers.
Well, that's all from us this week. Thank you for joining us as we dusted off the podcasting chairs and re-engaged the jaw muscles, which have been hitherto only employed for chowing down the Christmas jockeys. Join us again next time as we forge headlong into 2018 in the next edition of The Velocast.